Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day and welcome to the Anacap Financial Europe conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Chris Ross Roberts. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Anacap Financial Europe SA CCAF RAIF quarterly investor presentation for the period ending 31st December 2017. As set out on page 2 of the presentation, Justin, Tim and I will take you through the presentation and then we'll open the lines to the Q&A session at the end. In addition to the Q&A session, please remember you can send any questions through to info@anacapfe.com or through the website at www.anacapfe.com, where we'll endeavour to reply to them as soon as we can. Details can be found at the end of the presentation. Before I begin, can I please draw your attention to the disclaimer on page 1 of the presentation, which highlights that the presentation is produced solely for informational purposes and cautions against any forward-looking statements, and that by attending this call and reviewing the presentation, you're agreeing to the limitations set out on page 1 of the presentation. I'd like to start by turning to page 3, basis of preparation of the financial statements, before handing over to Justin. The results we are presenting today are the combined results of the portfolio business and Anacap Financial Europe for the 12 months ended 31st of December 2017. The financial statements for AIF, also published today, cover the period from incorporation, being the 28th of June 2017 to the 31st of December 2017. And as such, are the first full set of financial statements for the legal entity Anacap Financial Europe SA. The acquisition of the portfolio business was completed by AFE on the 21st of July 2017. And as such, the financial statements only recognise revenue and collections from that date. This is notwithstanding the fact that the transaction was based on the fair values at the 30th of June 2017. Cash collected in the 20 days to the 21st of July 2017 has been treated as predetermination cash, deducted from fair value in determining the opening balance sheet within the financial statements, and is not included in either collections or revenue in the financial statements. In addition, as there was no prior legal period for the legal entity of AFE, there are no comparatives in the financial statements published today. Therefore, in order to provide bondholders and other interested parties with a true comparative data for the full 12 months to 31st December 17 and the 12 months to 31st December 16, this presentation includes the results for the full 12 months by combining the results of the portfolio business together with the results of the AFE, including cash collections for the first 20 days. A reconciliation of the financial statements published today that exclude collections for the first 20 days or July, can be found in the appendix on page 22. I'll now hand over to Justin, who will start by covering the highlights on page 4.
Thanks, Chris. Turning to some of the highlights for the full year 2017, we've seen continued strong collections performance for the full year of 17, in line with forecasts at just over 98%. We maintain a sound financial profile with strong growth in both revenues and adjusted EBITDA, improved margins supported by cost efficiencies and a digital platform which allows us to be nimble across geographies and asset types. We've recently completed full revaluations of all of our portfolios, and as of the end of December 2017, which resulted in an isolated impairment charge on a single Italian unsecured consumer portfolio, we believe this to be a prudent markdown based on a slower than expected development of our litigation-based strategies. However, we have taken action by introducing a new DCA to our Italian panel and do not see this impact more broadly in our Italian portfolio where collections remain strong. Indeed, ERC remains underpinned by significant collateral in the form of both real estate and cash, with 360 million euros of collections within the next 4 years alone. We maintain a strong pipeline where our extensive network and origination capabilities allow for disciplined deployment, with significant available liquidity, including an upsized RCF to $90 million from $45 million previously. This will allow us to pick our spots rather than chase growth. Net debt to adjusted EBITDA is at a low 3.1 times, which is down from 3.7 in March of 2017. At this point, I'll turn it back over to Chris to go through some of the key financial highlights.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. If we can turn to page 5, the key financial highlights for the year ended 31st of December 2017. I'm pleased to report that we are seeing positive growth across a number of our key financial metrics. Revenue in the 12 months to the 31st of December 2017 has grown by 16.2% to $78.9 million compared to the same period in the prior year, with core collections growing at a faster rate of 38.4% to $123 million for the 12 months to the 31st of December 2017. The drop in operating cost ratio, which excludes non-recurring costs, decreased from 27.6% for the 12 months to December 16 to 24.6% for the 12 months of December 17. And this, together with strong collections, has driven a jump in normalized adjusted EBITDA to $90.2 million, up by 50.1%, and a normalized adjusted EBITDA margin of 73.3%, up from 67.6% in the comparable prior period. I think it's worth noting that the operating cost ratio we refer to is the total operating costs, excluding non-recurring items, rather than a cost-to-collect ratio, and includes all overheads of the business. Our overhead structure is variable and relative to the value of portfolios held in the business. Our relatively low overheads, driven by the use of our digital platform, Minerva, and its variable nature, results in an overall higher margin. In summary, AFE, total operating costs, are market-leading. However, we should point out that part of the increase in margin is driven by strong collections on a performing book that has a low cost to collect, but and also reflects the maturity of the book acquired by AFE, where the cost has been invested in expense in advance of receiving collections. The operating cost ratio can be impacted in the short term by significant deployment and onboarding costs, which, as you know, are expensed as incurred. If we turn to page 6, growth in collections and revenue, we can see graphic representation of growth in gross collections and revenue since 2014 to 2017. The historic period includes some asset sales and portfolios, which should not be part of the strategy on a go-forward basis. Now the business has a new capital structure and not a closed fund capital structure. This should allow the business to grow over the medium term. From 2014 to 2017, the CAGR on core collections, which excludes sales of portfolios, shows a growth of 30%. In the current year, this has accelerated to 38%, reflecting the maturity of the book and purchases made in late 2016 and early 2017. Similarly, revenue has grown by 14.3% over the period 2014 to 2017, by 16.2% in the current year. But as we account for revenue under the effective interest rate method, revenue growth is more evenly spread than collections. Turning to page 7, strong EBITDA and margin improvement. You'll see that operating costs have declined from 35% of collections in 2014 to 25% over the period 2017. And have grown at significantly lower rates than core collections, i.e., total costs in the current year have grown by 24%, whereas core collections have grown by 38%. Normalized adjusted EBITDA has grown by 50.1% to $90.2 million, up from $60.1 million in the year to December 2017, with margins improving from 49% to 73% over the period 2014 to 2017. Again, this reflects the lower overhead structure and cost efficiency supported by our digital platform, Minerva, It also reflects the maturity of the book. As I said earlier, when a portfolio is acquired, the costs in the earlier months, first year, tend to be higher as the cost of onboarding the portfolio and any initial legal costs are incurred. As we deploy capital during 2018, I would anticipate that we may see a marginal uptick in cost relative to collections. It's also worth noting that the normalised adjusted EBITDA at $90 million is 12.5% higher than the pro forma number we quoted in the offer memorandum for March 2017. Excluded from normalised adjusted EBITDA are a number of non-recurring items that have been charged to profit. These include the following for the year, two of which have been recognised in this quarter. In the year, we have a total impairment charge of $13.3 million. At Q2, we reported an impairment of $5.9 million, which reflected delays to time of cash receipts on the Spanish portfolio, partly due to suspension of some mortgage foreclosures across regional courts in Spain. As anticipated, we are still waiting for the European Courts of Justice to hand down some guidance to the Spanish courts before proceedings will be unblocked. In the current quarter, as Justin mentioned, we reported an isolated impairment on an Italian secured consumer portfolio of $7.4 million due to underperformance with one of our services, which is now being remediated. I'll come on to talk about this in more detail when I cover ERC later in the presentation. We've also made a provision for non-recurring tax charge of $4.4 million in the year. As a reminder, the group's activities are based primarily in Luxembourg, where entities are subject to corporate income tax, municipal business tax, and net wealth tax. AFV itself is subject to Luxembourg subscription tax, which is based at the rate of 0.01% on aggregate net asset value. The aggregate charge in respect of the above was €210,000, and two non-recurring tax provisions were made in the period. One in respect of Portugal, where the Portuguese tax authorities have raised an assessment on the taxable profit of the Lux entity that owns the assets. A total provision has been made for $2.6 million for the period 2013 to 2017. We would anticipate that a further charge will be incurred in 2018 of around €1.1 million. After 2018, we anticipate an alternative structure that is relatively common in the sector and is recognised by the Portuguese tax authorities will be in place, reducing the tax burden on that particular portfolio. A further tax provision of €2.1 million was made in respect to one of the older Romanian portfolios. This provision reflects a difference of opinion on when tax falls due, either on an individual asset sale basis or on the results of the whole portfolio. The Romanian tax authority's view is that tax is due on the profits of each individual asset. When at underwriting, we'd assume that tax would be due only once the whole portfolio was in positive territory. We are disputing both tax positions, but have raised a provision in the financial statements to be prudent. A revised structure is already in place for later Romanian deals. Non-recurring operating costs also include costs of $2.4 million incurred in connection with the acquisition of the portfolio business by AFE, which were expensed when incurred. And overall, I believe we've taken a conservative view in the preparation of these financial statements. If we can turn to page 8, accuracy in collections forecasts. You can see that we collected $45.9 million of total gross attributable collections in Q4 compared to $47.8 million in the forecast derived from the June revaluation. This was 96% of the quarter's forecast, some of which was collected early in Q2, where we collected 104% of the June forecast. Q4 was particularly pleasing, as the forecast represented 39% of the full-year forecast. And as you may recall, some of our more significant positions are large by the nature of the underlying collateral and harder to predict which quarter they may fall. Overall for the year, we made attributable collections of $119 million, broadly in line with forecasts. Please note for you that those like time numbers, that for pages 8, 9, and 10, we refer to attributable collections, which exclude collections that relate to money collected on behalf of co-investors, and are the numbers that go into our ERC. Pages 6 and 7 show total gross collections, which include amounts collected on behalf of co-investors, and reflect the gross level of activity undertaken and managed by the business. To be clear, 84-month ERC always excludes amounts due to co-investors. Turning to page 9, strong collections from existing portfolios together with market-leading cost structure driving EBITDA growth. The bar chart sets out expected ERC by year of collection. As a reminder, each quarter a review of ERC is undertaken, and at the half and full year, a very detailed asset-by-asset review is completed and ERC forecasts. We're estimating to collect over $360 million over the next 4 years for any further investments are taken into account. Turning to page 10, we set out the ERC bridge from December 2016 to 31st December 2017. From the left-hand side of the bar chart, you can see that the opening ERC at the 31st of December 2016 was 460 million euros. Since that date, the 31st of December 2017, 118.3 million of ERC has been added through portfolio acquisitions. That's deployment of 65 million at a gross money multiple of 1.82 times. And 119.1 million has been collected, some of which is from the new acquisitions in the period and has since been collected in 2017. In effect, purchases made in the period were sufficient to maintain replacement rate for ERC. The net roll forward period, which adds an additional year, adds further 2 million. This excludes 2024 collections from 2017 purchases. Each half year, the most recent being December 17, a detailed asset-by-asset revaluation is performed on all portfolios. This exercise has resulted in a reduction to forecast ERC on the isolated Italian consumer portfolio that Justin and I referred to earlier within the 84 months, totaling 23.3 million, resulting in ERC at the end of the year of 437.9 million euros. A corresponding impairment charge of 7.4 million has been recognised in the financial statement. Turning to page 11, evolution of ERC, deployment in 2017, sufficient to maintain ERC. ERC impacted by isolated revaluation of consumer unsecured Italian portfolio. The bar chart sets out the evolution for ERC for the period 2014 to 2017. Had it not been for the revaluation impact recorded in 2017, ERC would have been constant over 2016 to 2017. The portfolio we wrote down is a single granular Italian consumer unsecured book that initially performed above its expectations in late 2016 and early 2017. The collections curve assumed a ramp up in legal activity that did not take place in sufficient scale. When we undertook a detailed review this quarter, and engaged with external parties to triangulate our views, this resulted in a reduction in ERC and the corresponding impairment charge. We have since terminated one of the services and migrated a proportion of accounts to a legal recovery specialist. We believe we have taken a prudent view of collections in a revised forecast. There were no other negative adjustments to any other portfolio. Turning it to page 12, net debt profile of AFE leverage ratio reduced to 3.1 times. You'll note that the business has been highly cash generative since the acquisition of the portfolio business. We've seen normalized adjusted EBITDA growth of 50% to over 90 million euros with a market leading cost structure, and we've been selective on how we deploy capital. As a result, we've seen a large drop in our leverage ratio from 3.7 times in March 2017. i.e. the numbers quoted in the offer memorandum, to a position at the end of December of 3.1 times. Additionally, in February this year, we upsized our super senior revolving credit facility to 90 million euros. We have sufficient liquidity to meet our deployments for the current year and probably next year as well. And at the end of March, we had liquidity in excess of 120 million euros. Net debt was 278 million at the end of December 2017. A reconciliation of total debt to debt shown in the financial statements is provided to assist you in your analysis. The key reconciling items being cost of issue, including the discount given on the issuance notes and the accrued interest. At this point, I'd like to hand over to Tim, who will cover the breakdown of ERC, underlying collateral, and gross money models.
Thanks, Chris. So, starting with slide 13, there's good collection performance in Q4, where we closed out the year only marginally below expectations. As Chris mentioned earlier, in Q4 we achieved 96% of the forecast for the quarter, following on from Q3, where we collected 104% of forecast. It's worth reiterating, Q4 alone represented just under 40% of the total ERC forecast for the year. And given the back book contains some larger individual positions where collections are dependent on asset sales or distributions after legal processes where timing can be hard to predict, this was a good result. Overall for the year, we collected 119 million of attributable gross collections, marginally below forecast at 98.2%. The performance was generally good across all markets, with Italy above expectations due to some strong acceleration of collections on some of the older mixed portfolios. This was obviously partially offset by the underperformance in our consumer unsecured loans, which, as Chris mentioned earlier, we reforecast in December, resulting in the impairment. The performance in our Romanian and UK portfolios were in line with target. Portugal and Spain were marginally below forecast, mainly on the secured portfolios where a small handful of sales did not complete as expected, along with a cash and court distribution which did not come through. These were not major concerns and the collections were delayed only until this quarter in Q1. Looking at the breakdown of ERC, you'll see the geographic representation has marginally changed since our last update. Italy, which was previously 72% of ERC at September end, has now reduced to 64%. The big change is Spain, which now represents 15% of total ERC, up from 6% at the end of Q3. This follows the purchase of an SME secured portfolio during the fourth quarter, which demonstrates our ability to continue to deploy capital across multiple geographies, provides further diversification of our ERC by both geography and asset type. Romania and the UK are broadly unchanged, although our exposure to Romania has increased during Q1, as Justin will touch on when he covers pipeline. Finally, as stated on the slide, 80% of ERC is now from seasoned portfolios which were purchased more than 12 months ago. This means we've had time to manage the books and validate our underwriting assumptions, and this gives us a high degree of confidence in our ERC forecasts. Moving to slide 14, I've mentioned this previously, but the diversification of our ERC across geographies and asset classes continues to be a key strength of the business. In addition, there is a high level of security backing our current ERC of 437.8 million, with around 70% of collections now expected from secured loans, or around 299 million of ERC. We split this out on the slide to show how much of this comes from real estate currently securing loans, which currently totals around 253.6 million, and how much from assets which have already been sold and we're now awaiting the proceeds to be distributed from court, and this totals 46 million. The real estate secured collections of 353.6 million is underpinned by a large volume of first lien or first lien equivalent collateral with an open market value of 551.2 million. Another way of looking at this segment of our ERC is that it has 2.17 times collateralized ratio, so there's strong over-collateralization. Real estate secured also includes a portion of performing loans in the UK with ERC of 15.6 million and a further portion of performing loans in Italy with ERC of 26.5 million. In total, this amounts to around 9.5% of total ERC for AEFE, and this provides very regular, stable-based cash flows for the business. The credit quality of this segment remains very strong, with very low levels of arrears and prepayments providing some upside. At $46 million, it's worth highlighting the amount of cash now sitting in courts or bankruptcies and awaiting distribution is around 10.5% of AFE ERC, up slightly from 10% at the end of Q3. We have very prudent forecasts around the timing of these distributions. However, there is some risk of timing volatility at the individual portfolio level, as evidenced in Portugal during the quarter. Finally, in addition to the heavily collateralized secured ERC, we also have a further $138.3 million of unsecured ERC, which is supported by a high presence of guarantors, which increases the propensity and potential sources of recovery on these loans. Over the page on slide 15, to continue the theme on collateralization, there are a few important points to note. Firstly, the $551.2 million of real estate first lien or first lien equivalent collateral is spread across all countries. Italy represents the largest volume with $358.6 million, or roughly two-thirds of the total, with the remaining third fairly evenly spread across the other four countries. When we look at the underlying asset type, the overwhelming majority are granular residential assets, such as houses and apartments. This is important from a liquidity perspective. These are often the easiest assets to sell when compared to commercial buildings, industrial assets, or land. In addition to the residential assets, we have around 10 to 15% each of commercial, industrial, and other types of assets. The balance, or around 6% of the total OMB, is land, which is often the least liquid and hardest to sell type of real estate, which is where we have the lowest exposure. On the cash and court side, this really only impacts Italy and Portugal, where we have high volumes of loans to companies in bankruptcy proceedings, or where it can take some time for courts to release cash from assets sold through foreclosures, which is mainly Italy. 62.2% of the total, or $228.6 million of the cash in court is in Italy, with the balance in Portugal. Finally, as mentioned on the previous page, the $138.3 million of unsecured ERC is supported by high levels of guarantors, with 43% of all loans in our unsecured portfolios backed by either multiple borrowers or one or more guarantors. This provides additional channels for recoveries, and we continually break new accounts on a monthly basis in this segment. Moving to page 16. Overall, gross money multiples remain attractive at an average of 2.02 times at December end. And just to remind everyone again, our gross money multiples are calculated based on actual collections to date plus 84-month ERC, not 120-month ERC. Gross money multiples can be impacted by a wide range of factors, such as asset type, whether portfolios performing or non-performing, secured or unsecured, whether loans are in litigation, or whether you've taken possession of a property or not. For example, where portfolios contain repossessed assets, where the harder collections work has already been completed, their multiples will be lower when compared to portfolios which you've purchased which are yet to be litigated. Finally from me, in summary, we closed out the year well with marginal underperformance against a strong target. And although we had an impairment in our Italian unsecured portfolio, this was isolated to one asset class in one country, and as mentioned already, we have already taken action by replacing a servicer. Overall, we remain very positive on our core markets from both an asset management and collections perspective. I'll now hand over to Justin to provide an update on our deployment pipeline.
Thanks, Tim. Turning to slide 17, you can see that our deployment for the full year of 2017 was lower than expected. I think this does reflect continued discipline in pricing. It's not at all evidence of the very large volume of pipeline that we're still continuing to see across our core geographies and indeed in new potential geographies in Europe. If you look at where we're focused, the deployment was centered on core jurisdictions where we have extensive expertise, including Italy and Spain. In fact, the pipeline, turning to slide 18, of deals across all five of our core geographies remains strong,
with over $8 billion in face value reviewed since the start of Q4 2017 alone. This reflects a strong embedded origination network across Europe, which is aimed at maintaining a highly selective investment approach. The lack of newly completed investments in Q4 was in part driven by strong visibility to more attractive opportunities targeted for the first quarter of 2018. In fact, we have signed two new Romanian secured portfolios totaling just over 15 million euros spend, both be completed by the end of this month. We have two further tranches of a previously signed Spanish portfolio at 5.1 and 2.6 million to complete in April and June, respectively. And we're in the final stage of review of secured portfolios across Spain, Portugal, and Italy, totaling over 100 million euros in potential spend. We've seen a significant recent uptick in opportunities in both Spain and Portugal, where large volumes of primarily real estate secured NPLs remain on local bank balance sheets and where we have extensive experience. There's also been a notable continued pickup in competition across the Italian market, where we're also continuing to support growth in Phoenix Asset Management's third-party servicing business. After launching Phoenix together with management over 3 years ago, PAM has grown to over 9 billion euros in assets under management and now counts PIMCO as an additional shareholder, which further validates the strength of the platform we helped to build. AIF continues also to review markets outside its five core geographies, including Poland, where AnaCap has extensive wider investment experience in our private equity business, and where we see secured portfolio activity continuing to develop. It's in secured assets compared to consumer unsecured portfolios, where many well-capitalized local participants historically have been quite dominant, where we believe we can achieve superior risk-adjusted returns. Turning to slide 19, I'd like to conclude with a few further highlights. We've delivered continued strong financial performance with collections broadly in line with target for 2017 and indeed off to a strong start in 2018. AIF remains a high margin business with low leverage, down to 3.1 times from 3.7 times adjusted EBITDA in less than a year. Despite maintaining a disciplined, highly selective approach to new investments, we successfully replaced required ERC over the course of 2017 and have ample available liquidity, including an expanded RCF at 90 million euros. We have a strong ongoing pipeline of portfolio opportunities overall, as European banks have significantly recapitalized and continue to accelerate disposal activity, particularly around secured portfolios in Southern and Eastern Europe, where we are well positioned and have extensive expertise. We are also seeing an increasing volume of secondary market opportunities from funds, including where we have direct proprietary experience, presenting another wave of potential transactions. Finally, we're continuing to invest in both our IT platform and team, as well as in proprietary servicing capabilities across our core geographies. This includes enhancement to our Italian master servicing approach and further diversification of our Italian DCA panel, as we mentioned earlier. This is in addition to supporting PAM's continued growth in its third-party servicing business. We also recently completed the buyout of a Spanish servicing company in which we previously held a minority stake, which we intend to further develop to support a growing portfolio and pipeline of Spanish investments. At this point, I think we'll turn it over to questions.
Thank you. And if you'd like to ask a question, you may signal by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star one to ask a question. We'll pause for a moment to allow everyone the opportunity to signal for questions. go first to Alexander Cornes with Tyco.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. Just two questions for me. The first one is, do you have the replacement rate for 2017? And the second one is on the pipeline side. It seems that Q1 was quite quiet, so you didn't buy any portfolio in Q1. Is that correct? Thank you.
Yeah, Alex, could you just repeat your first question? There was a bit of noise in here.
Yeah, sorry. That was about the replacement rate for 2017, if you have a figure.
Yeah. Okay, so I will answer that and give you the replacement rate, and I'll let Justin talk to you about Q1 pipeline and Q2 pipeline. So if you look at our forecast collections of our existing ERC for 2018, it's around 123 million. There's about a roll forward of approximately 10 million of ERC. So that would make our replacement rate, depending on the asset type we buy, but if we assumed a gross money multiple of around 1.7-ish, it'd be around 70-odd million pounds, and not dissimilar to the current year.
I think on the pipeline, some of the deals I alluded to on the pipeline slide were indeed finalized in Q1, but they're not funding until Q2, including the deals I mentioned that are funding in April. We also have, I would argue, an unusually large Q1 pipeline this year. Part of the reason we were quite disciplined in Q4 is we felt some of the pricing and a few transactions we're involved in got away from us in Q4, but we already had very strong visibility to the pipeline in the new year. And I mentioned over 100 million of deals at very advanced stage of analysis where we expect to deploy further capital in Q2 as well, but those are deals that are significantly advanced at this stage.
And would that be funded with RCF or not?
A combination of available cash and RCF.
Okay. Thank you.
As a reminder, that is star one for questions. We'll go next to Mayank Gerdhard with Black Diamond.
Thank you very much for the presentation, and congratulations on a strong quarter. Just wanted to understand, just to follow up, I guess, from one of the previous questions. So in terms of no particular investments in Q1 and then being pushed more into Q2, can you give us an idea of where you see the ERC to end up at the end of Q1? And also, just in terms of the Spanish servicer that you have bought out, is this within the AFE restricted group, or is this more at the Anacap Financial?
No, let me answer that question first. It's been purchased by AFE. It's a very modest acquisition, so you'll see in the financial statements we disclose the price, so it's a 800,000 purchase, and there's a significant cash on balance sheet, and there's a deferred payment over the next 4 years for a further 800. And that will be part of the within the restricted group.
Okay.
In respect of ERC, where we'd expect ERC to come in, we'd expect collections in the order of 20 million in Q1, relatively low quarter for us, and we've not purchased anything in Q1 itself. So you can, we start at 437. You could effectively take 20 million off there. That's where we'd expect Q1. Certainly by the end of the year, however, we'd expect ERC to be over 500 billion.
Understood. And then just in terms of the RCF upsize, presumably that was with your existing banks. Just wanted to understand if that was an automatic upsize or if they had to actually go to committee, and is that to fund the circa 100 million plus pipeline?
Yeah, it was actually a new lender came in for a substantial proportion of it. So when we did the initial fundraising, we put in an RCF but for good order, but we saw an attractive pipeline, as Justin said, coming towards Q1, and therefore we put in that facility in February. And clearly I've been talking to a number of banks, and there's one bank in particular that was highly competitive and joined the existing syndicate. So, no, it wasn't an automatic upsize. It was something that went through all the various credit approvals and necessary technical analysis, but gives us significant firepower and liquidity over the next 5 years.
Understood. And then just in terms of Q1 collections, you've mentioned 20 million. How should we be thinking about Q1 EBITDA versus prior year?
Look, our costs are very variable. Our costs are all variable, so it will be very much in terms of EBITDA be relative to the size of the collection. So you can, if you look at our cost operating cost expense ratio that we reported for the year, it will be very similar. There are no unusual costs in Q1.
Understood. So that likely means that you might be at or around last year.
Yes.
Excluding portfolio sales.
Yeah. If I look at an aggregate basis, clearly I'd be expecting modest growth in 2018, as you can see from the ERC that we've got in our back book. That will generate growth in its own right. But we would be expecting, if I look at EBITDA growth for the period, to be in the sort of 8 to 10% region.
Understood. And then just given the cash flow generation absent of, significant acquisitions or lumpy investments, I guess, do you intend to pay any portions of the FRNs back with the excess cash, or would you rather keep that liquidity intact for your pipeline?
I think we'd rather keep our liquidity. We've certainly got no intention to repay any of the long-term financing. It's a sort of a seven-year horizon that we look at. Certainly, we see a lot of activity in the market and a lot of opportunities. But as Justin said, we want to maintain a discipline, deploy capital when we feel that we can get the right level of return.
Understood. Thank you.
Again, that's star one for any questions. Go next to Frank Lehman with Zillow Capital.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call and congratulations to a good 2017 reported. I'm looking at page 12 and seeing the evolution of the leverage ratio. As management, would you look at a maximum or a minimum or something that's optimal for your business on that ratio, or is it just the outcome of what the business opportunities are and what the history of purchasing certain portfolios and their liquidation results in? How do you look at that leverage?
So we look at our, obviously, when we look at our leverage ratio in terms of EBITDA, then, we try and keep that under four. So it might, if we buy a lot of portfolio at the end of the year, for example, it might tick up at a particular point to 3.8 or 3.9. But generally, we're trying to keep it at four. If it went above four, we would probably aim to reduce it. In terms of LTV, that's very dependent on asset type. As Tim explained, if we bought a unsecured consumer book, gross money market might be 2.3, 2.4, and yet that would drop quite quickly. If we bought an REO type of portfolio where the bank's already liquidated the underlying collateral and hands over to us a portfolio of properties, then the gross money market is going to be a lot lower, and we might see that tick up slightly.
Okay, understood. Thank you very much.
We'll go next to Helen Rodriguez with Credit Suisse.
Oh, hello there. I have a slightly random list of questions, if I may. Can you talk a little bit about, you mentioned the political thing in Spain, the foreclosures. What proportion of your ERC generally it might be, related to mortgages in Spain?
I'll hand that over to Tim.
So the the issue where which Chris was referring to and we discussed during the Q2 results is really it looks at there are two issues and they predominantly relate to residential mortgage customers. So this is where certain loans have abusive default interest clause or default, aggressive default interest clauses and also aggressive early termination clauses. Now, the local Spanish courts actually went to the European Court of Justice seeking some guidance on how they should be treated. The most recent update we have is that we're still waiting on feedback or a decision from the European Court of Justice to say what is deemed to be abusive effectively, and then that will unblock the court process. So what we're seeing is for certain courts in Spain, they are looking at these mortgages, they come up through the legal process and they're saying we don't know if that's abusive or not. And then other courts are continuing on as normal. So the impact on our portfolio at the moment is very minor. We're talking it would impact, we have one mortgage portfolio there, residential mortgage portfolio there with around 300 loans going through foreclosures. That is approximately, or it will impact less than, 2 or 3% of our total ERC. We then recently purchased an SME secured portfolio. Now, the SME, these issues do not impact SME loans at all. So none of that new acquisition will be impacted by this.
Sure. Okay, great. And then just to be clear, when you're talking about your collateral, I know you don't put the exposure you have through loan notes into the ERC. You don't do that in your collateral ratios either, do you?
Sorry, elaborate a little bit on that.
So, if I understand correctly, you've got your loan notes where you have exposure to other portfolios, like 10, 15 million, and you say explicitly that you don't include it in your ERC. So I'm just assuming that you don't use that. You don't count that pool of collateral in your collateral ratios that you show in the presentation.
No, not in the collateral ratio. So in our ERC,
you have your proportion.
We have our proportion of, say, the Romanian portfolios where we might own a percentage of that thing, but we don't we only recognise our proportion of collections. Where we might have a co-investor, again, we only show our proportion of collections in the ERC.
On the collateral, okay, great. Then you've got 11 million of cash held at services. Is there any? Is that you guys being nice, or is that just they haven't given you the money?
No. That is the fact that we close up. We close on the books on the 31st of December, and then they send that up in 2nd of January or a bit later in January. Those are something we've recognised as December collections, but they have yet to, because the services are third party, so clearly it takes them time to reconcile and send that up to us.
Okay, I think that was it actually. Is there anything else to come back? All right, thank you.
We have no further questions at this time.
Okay, well, look, I'd like to thank everybody for joining the call, and thank you very much for attending.
And this will conclude today's call.
Thank you.